welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Good day, Mark. How are you doing?
Fine.
Good. We're going to return to an old favorite topic of ours, prostate cancer, this week. This particular poem that we're going to talk about today looks at early interventions. It's a study that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine. The title of the article is Treatment for Symptom-Detected Early Prostate Cancer, Effective in Patients Younger than 65 Years Old. So maybe, Mark, you can take us through the study. It was a randomized controlled trial, again, published in the New England Journal of Medicine.
Yeah, these were a Swedish study, and at that time when they identified these men, 695 men, between 1989 and 1999, they weren't doing routine PSA in Sweden. So these men were all under age 75. They all had at least a 10-year life expectancy. They had symptom-diagnosed prostate cancer. So they had, you know, urinary tract symptoms, urinary frequency, you know, things like that, that led someone to do an investigation, do an exam, and then that led to an ultrasound and biopsies, and they made the diagnosis.
Can I interrupt for 1 second, Mark?
Yeah, sure.
Most of the symptoms that you're describing are far more common with BPH than they are with actual prostate cancer, right?
Right. I mean, once we started using the PSA, the incidence of prostate cancer in this country, I think, at least doubled. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you look at, there's some really nice graphs that show you incidence versus mortality for different cancers.
Right.
And it's fascinating. You look at melanoma, it just is skyrocketing, yet the mortality hasn't changed. Incidence going way up, mortality hasn't changed. Thyroid cancer, same thing. Prostate cancer, incidence went way up. It's actually come down somewhat. There was this a whole bolus of undiagnosed prostate cancer that, you know, was heavily diagnosed in the 90s and early 2000s. It's now starting to come down somewhat as we've sort of gotten that inventory of old prostate cancers diagnosed. It's not completely clear that we can extrapolate information from studies in symptom diagnosed versus non-symptom diagnosed.
And how did they separate out the folks that had just BPH? I mean, because did they do, you know, bone scans? And I mean, because it was localized, right?
They probably did a prostate ultrasound. I mean, they weren't very specific in the study about the exact workup for the typical patient, but these were, you know, they were ultrasound and biopsy, and then they found the prostate cancer.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, they were T0, T1, or T2.
Right.
No mets. PSA was less than 50 in all of them, and they were all well-differentiated or moderately well-differentiated tumors. And they randomized them to either a radical prostatectomy or watchful waiting. Any local recurrences in surgery patients and any metastases in any of the patients were treated with hormonal therapy. And in the watchful waiting group, if they had obstructive symptoms, they just did a TURP. They didn't remove the whole prostate. The preoperative Gleason scores were compared with postoperative Gleason scores. And when they looked postoperatively, it turned out that a lot of the patients actually had a more aggressive Gleason score than they were originally assigned. The mean age was 65. The mean PSA was 13. And they followed these guys for 13 years. They did find all-cause mortality was lower in the radical prostatectomy group. Number needed to treat there was 15. It was 46% versus 53%. So lower all-cause mortality. Prostate-specific mortality was similarly lower, so most of the benefit was, you know, due to prostate cancer-specific mortality. There was also less chance of distant mets in the patients who had a radical prostatectomy. But what they found was that they didn't find any difference between higher or lower PSA groups or higher or lower Gleason groups. What they did find was that men younger than 65 had a clear benefit in mortality. Older than 65, they did not. Mm-hmm. So I think that the take-home message here is that especially for younger men with localized prostate cancer, there is a benefit to radical prostatectomy in terms of improving mortality. It's not clear that there's any benefit over age 65. And, you know, I just, hopefully this is going to help make men, particularly men who have other comorbidities who are not good surgical candidates, think about watchful waiting as a reasonable option.
Right. In that group over 65, as our listeners will know very well, it's a whole potpourri of patients from people that, are, as they say, today's 50-year-olds who happen to be over 65, as well as some people with lots of comorbidities. And, the key is not to do this based on that sharp cutoff, but to really sit down and talk with your patients. And
we're going to see a lot more research looking at when do we stop screening. I mean, I was just talking to a friend, friend's wife, and he's a family physician, and his wife is a nurse, and she said that her father, they were bugging him to get his colonoscopy done at age 90. Mm. And they finally told him to, take a long walk off a short dock. I mean, it
right.
was, that's, to me, crazy. A 90-year-old with no real history to worry about,
right.
To be putting that man through colonoscopy just didn't make any sense. So I think we do need, we're going to have some better guidance, and the guidelines coming from the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force are increasingly looking at, stopping points that seem reasonable to me.
Right. Again, I think it will be crucial that they market that, particularly given the dialogue that's going on in America these days,
mm-hmm.
that it's clear that it isn't being driven by cost. It's really being driven by utility and
mm-hmm.
what is the benefit and what's the expected lifespan and what's the effect on this man's quality of life of going through the test and going through treatment.
Yeah, David Brooks, who is the one of the columnists, op-ed people for the New York Times, he's
sure.
sort of their token conservative guy. And he had a very nice editorial talking about end-of-life care and how we are doing way too much for many patients that's not benefiting them at the end of life. And this falls into some of that same category. And the backlash against his editorial, if you read the online comments and some of the letters that they published later on, people were very critical that, how dare you talk about limiting care and rationing care? It's a slippery slope. And once you start limiting care for this, you'll limit care for everything. And they're off to the gulag. And, it was, some people really are very sensitive to these issues. So I think how we communicate it is real important.
Anyways, I look forward to talking with you again next week, Mark. Have a good week.
All right, likewise.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem.